Hello and welcome back to Conversations at Jackrabbit Slims. I'm Craig Cohen, and this episode, I am very happy to sit down with another Las Vegas resident. He's a freelance writer and film TV critic at various places, which we'll talk about. And he's also the co-host of the Awesome Movie Year podcast. I'd like to welcome to the show Josh Bell. Josh, welcome.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
All right, excellent. So let's talk a little bit about the Awesome Movie Year podcast. It's a really, really cool concept that I think a lot of people will probably enjoy.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I'm co-hosting that with Jason Harris, who's another Vegas local. He's a stand-up comedian and a filmmaker and a writer and a friend of mine since we've been in high school. So we've been talking about movies together as friends for many, many, many years. And we started this podcast a little over a year ago. And each season, we're actually in our fifth season right now. Each season, we take a look back at a different year in film history, and each episode covers a different movie, and we break it up into a number of categories that we've got. Some things that are kind of designated for us, like the Best Picture Oscar winner or the number one movie at the box office, and some personal picks that we make, or genres like documentary, where we kind of pick things that fit the most notable of the year. So we do 12 to 13 episodes each season to give kind of a snapshot of a different year in film. And the fifth season that we've been recording and releasing right now is on 1977. And so we talked about Star Wars, and we just did an episode on the documentary Pumping Iron, and got a lot of more cool stuff coming up. So would love for people to check it out. AwesomeMovieYear.com is where you can find it, or anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Yeah, and I'll include a link in the show notes there. And you guys already did 1994, which of course covered Pulp Fiction. And if memory serves me, I listened to that episode quite a while ago. Dave Rosen, who was our first guest on Conversations with Jackrabbit Slims, was a guest on that episode.
Actually, Dave is our producer. He is a guest on every episode because Dave is a podcast wizard. And so when we were first coming up with this idea, we said we have to get Dave to do it because we don't know what we're doing. So we recruited Dave. Of course, has his own podcast, Piecing It Together, which is a fantastic movie podcast that I've been on many times. So we recruited him to kind of help us figure out all the logistics of recording and editing and distributing and all of the stuff that we didn't know about, so that we could just sit down and talk movies, which is what we wanted to do. So Dave kind of chimes in to varying degrees on the movie. Sometimes it'll depend on whether he's seen the movie or not. But he certainly contributed on the Pulp Fiction episode. And that was one of our very first episodes, actually. And our first season was 1994. And that was maybe the third or fourth episode we ever did. So we've gotten a little better since then, if you listen to that one.
Yeah, and you're also a freelance writer and a film and TV critic. Do you want to talk a little bit about where people might be able to go to find some of your pieces?
Sure, yeah. I write in a various online outlets these days. The best thing you can do is follow me on social media. You can check out Josh Bell Hates Everything on Facebook or at Signal Bleed on Twitter. And I kind of collate all my various work there. But I do movie reviews online for CBR, for Film Racket, and for Crooked Marquee. Those are the main places that I write. And then I'm also on TV and radio here in Las Vegas. You can catch me on KTNV Channel 13. On Fridays on the 11 a.m. news. And my reviews are also broadcast on Highway Radio, which is the station that keeps drivers entertained as they drive to and from Las Vegas in the California and Arizona deserts. Can also be heard here in town on 99.7, I think it is. So I'm all over the place. Yes.
Very, very cool. And I'll include any pertinent links in the show notes. Now, Josh, the timing of our conversation is a little fortuitous because we originally communicated quite some time ago and you would watch Pulp Fiction for your Awesome Movie Year, but you had to sit down and watch the movie again. And then this past week, as we're recording, there was a unique Pulp Fiction screening here in town. The drive-in did a double feature last week that you were able to sit in on. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I actually didn't stay for the whole double feature because it was a bit of a long amount of time to sit in the car to watch movies. But I mean, one of the great things about the drive-in is that every show really is a double feature. So you do get a lot of value for your $8 is what it costs to get a ticket. And because We have not really had major new movie releases for the past 5 months, thanks to the pandemic situation. The drive-in has been open most of that time. It was closed for, I want to say, maybe a month or two at most. But otherwise, it's been one of the few places that's been able to stay open because, of course, it's an easy social distancing situation. People stay in their cars. They're not in closed spaces together. So they've been showing a lot of older films and mixing it up. And they showed Pulp Fiction along with Jackie Brown on a few days this past week. So I went and I watched Pulp Fiction. I did not stay for Jackie Brown. Both of those are long movies. So
yes.
In addition to being a double feature, that's 5 hours of movie plus previews, and there is an intermission in between, and it would have been a lot. So, but I did go see Pulp Fiction, and it was great. I love that we have that drive-in here in Vegas. I know that indoor movie theaters are now opening up, and we do have new movies that are going to be coming out. For me personally, I'm not comfortable going to sit inside in an enclosed space in a movie theater with other people, but I definitely want to see these new movies that are opening. So I'm excited that we've got the drive-in here, that allows for that opportunity. And I wanted to kind of check it out in advance of those new movies coming out. And then, of course, for this podcast, so Pulp Fiction was the perfect experience for that.
Yeah, and I noticed you had said somewhere, either Twitter or on the Facebook group, about the fact that it wasn't as bright around because the West Wind sits next to a casino. So the big neon out front makes it a little brighter there. I haven't been there in a couple of years. When I vacationed here before I moved here, I used to go every trip just because it was so cool to go to the drive-in. So could you talk a little bit about the overall experience at the West Wind the other night seeing Pulp Fiction? Maybe start with, how did it look?
It actually looked pretty good. I hadn't been to that drive-in in many, many years. I want to say the last time I went, maybe I saw like an X-Men movie or something like that. And not one of the more recent ones either.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure that the last time I went, they were still projecting on film.
Okay.
And so it was a long time ago. And so they have digital projection now. And yeah, the picture looked pretty sharp. They were showing like the Conjuring movies, like a double feature of the two Conjuring movies on a screen next to me. And I wonder if something like that has a lot of dark, murky scenes might be tougher to watch. But Pulp Fiction isn't like that. So I had no problem seeing, as you say, it is adjacent to a couple of casinos, actually, the Texas and Fiesta Hotel casinos over there in North Las Vegas. And fortunately for the drive-in, but unfortunately for our local economy, both of those casinos are still closed. So some of the bright lights that would normally be on there are not on. Some of them are. But I didn't have difficulty seeing the screen. It's also right next to the North Las Vegas Airport, which is a small private airport, but there's sometimes airplanes coming and going there. But to me, I was concerned about that. I wasn't sure how it would look. And I had no trouble seeing the picture look sharp and clear, which gives me hope, again, because I want to go see Tenet. And I think you don't want to miss something on screen in a Christopher Nolan movie.
Yeah.
So I was pretty happy about that. And I think it also depends at that drive-in because the screens are, it depends on where in the actual drive-in they are. There's at least one screen that's like right alongside the road. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot more backlighting on that screen. And luckily that's not where I was. I think they were showing a Paul Blart Mall Cop on that screen. So no one wants to actually see that anymore.
Yeah, nobody really cares what that looks like. So this was the most recent time you saw Pulp Fiction. Can we travel back in time a little bit and sort of tell me about your first experiences with the movie?
Yeah, it's weird. I don't have a specific memory of the very first time. I mean, I can't tell you where I was exactly. I don't think I saw it in a theater when it opened. I would have been a teenager, 14 or 15 years old at the time that it opened in theaters. And I was familiar with it, but I don't know that I was able to go see it in a movie theater. So actually, weirdly enough, this drive-in experience was probably my first time seeing it in a theater of sorts. Mm-hmm. But certainly it was something that I was aware of, and I would have probably rented it from Blockbuster Video or something like that as soon as it came out on VHS. And I loved it as a teenager. I mean, I watched it a number of times. I owned it on VHS. It was one of the first movies that was kind of the transition from being you know, being a kid and watching sort of, I don't know, Hollywood type blockbuster movies or just whatever was around that my parents would show me, to becoming more interested in film at that time in the early 90s. And we talked about this a lot in our 1994 season on Awesome Movie Year because of the movies that we covered. Was really a time when I was sort of discovering the wider world of film and becoming more interested in that. So Pulp Fiction was a big part of that. And I was a huge fan of it. I remember buying a t-shirt of the poster.
I had that as well.
Yeah, the Pulp Fiction style, like a book cover poster with Uma Thurman. And I bought that t-shirt at Hot Topic and wore it proudly throughout high school and college. So yeah, it was definitely a formative movie for me in terms of getting into cinema, if we could say pretentiously. And then I've still enjoyed it. I mean, I'm not a person who watches movies over and over again.
Yeah.
So to say that I've watched it a lot means that I've probably seen it 5 times in the last 15 years or something. But for me, that is a lot.
Yeah.
And when I revisited it, because we talked about it on Awesome Movie Year, I loved it. And when I watched it again recently at the drive-in, I still loved it. It's great. And I personally, there aren't really any other Tarantino movies that I love. Mm-hmm. Some of his other movies I enjoy, some of them not so much, but there aren't any others. In fact, if I had watched Jackie Brown at that double feature, that might have been the second time. Like, yeah. I don't know that I've seen it more than once. Certainly none of the other Tarantino movies are movies that I feel eager to revisit. But Pulp Fiction is just so much fun and so brilliantly constructed, and I love it every time.
Yeah, it's funny. I went through a pretty big Tarantino phase when I saw Pulp Fiction for the first time, and then, you know, I went back and, you know, discovered Reservoir Dogs, and then I was there opening day for Jackie Brown, which was a really interesting experience because I'm a big Elmore Leonard fan, and Tarantino was adapting Elmore Leonard, so it made for a very weird movie-going experience, and it took a couple of viewings for Jackie Brown to grow on me. But I'm not a huge Tarantino in the now guy. My last probably big Tarantino push was when the Kill Bill movies came out, and that's 15 years ago now at this point. But I do have to say, Josh, that I fell in love with Tarantino again, and pandemic aside, one of the reasons I decided to finally really get this podcast off the ground after quite a few years was Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I think, is a really good maybe cousin to Pulp Fiction. I think Tarantino sort of got his groove back on that movie.
I mean, I like that movie. I wouldn't say that he got his groove back in the sense that I didn't dislike all, you know, many mm-hmm. movies up until that point. I think it's a spectrum of some of the movies that I like and some of the movies I don't like as much.
Yeah.
But I didn't get to a point where I thought, oh, Tarantino is great and now I don't like him anymore.
Right.
It was more just like Pulp Fiction is great and everything else that he does is usually pretty good.
Yeah.
But it doesn't. I mean, I like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I would probably place it above some other Tarantino movies. Although, again, I probably would have to watch some of those movies a second time because I haven't seen them in so long. But I enjoyed it. Brad Pitt is fantastic in that movie. I mean, so many of the performances are great, but certainly Brad Pitt, who got the awards attention, deservedly so. I think I liked Once Upon a Time in Hollywood more as sort of the just hangout recreation.
It's a total hangout movie. Yeah.
As opposed to the later, you know, the big climax with all the violence and everything that I think I was less enamored with, but that's really the point of it in a way. I mean, it all builds to that and the kind of revisionist history thing that Tarantino seems to be really into between that and Inglourious Basterds mm-hmm. and Django Unchained, that he's really into rewriting history and giving victims this revenge narrative, which is an interesting idea. And I don't know, it's always makes for great movies, but I'm all in favor of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah. So you also hit on something that my experience is very similar. You know, on episode 0 of the show, I talked about how Pulp Fiction sort of made me aware that there were decisions being made and that somebody ultimately had to make those decisions. And that's really the movie that sort of opened me up as a cinematic viewer. You mentioned sort of the same thing. It was a nice bridge movie from your adolescence to, you know, what you would become as an adult moviegoer. Do you think critically Pulp Fiction gets that kind of recognition, or do you think it still doesn't really get credit for sort of exposing people to cinema the way it did?
Well, I mean, I think critically it gets plenty of credit. I mean, it's certainly a movie that was highly acclaimed at the time it came out, and I think its reputation has remained solid. Mm-hmm. I mean, as far as credit for opening people's minds, I mean, for me at least, I feel like that's a factor of just of my age as much as anything. I happen to be at the age where I would have been interested in exploring that, you know, being a teenager, you know, getting older, and that was the movie that was out, right? If I had been 15 years old 10 years earlier, it would have been a different movie.
Yeah, Raging Bull or something.
Right, exactly, or whatever it is. I mean, I feel like it's just, if you're someone who is going to develop that interest, there's always something that can spark it. And it's going to depend on what you picked up at the video store or what was out in theaters or what a friend or a parent showed you. And it could be anything for anyone else. So, I mean, I think a teenager right now who encountered Pulp Fiction right now for some reason and not a newer movie might have the same experience. And people who are my age, again, on Awesome Movie Year, talking to my co-host Jason, we're about the same age. We had similar experiences with Pulp Fiction because we were at that same age at that time.
Right.
But I don't know that Pulp Fiction, any more than any other great movie, is responsible for sort of opening people's eyes to the possibilities of cinema. So, I mean, I think it gets as much credit as it deserves, and it doesn't necessarily deserve more.
Yeah. Now, another interesting thing is when it came out in 94, we were sort of seeing this explosion of, you know, independent film. Filmmakers like Steven Soderbergh were sort of breaking out. Kevin Smith had his big hit with Clerks. And, you know, you had Richard Linklater and Robert Rodriguez. Now, one thing that I also, you know, was new to me at least was sort of the conversations that the characters had in Pulp Fiction. And again, being an Elmore Leonard fan, you know, in the Elmore Leonard novels, they talk about movies and they talk about music. But in movies, you never really saw it with as much focus that you got in Pulp Fiction. And I don't think it's exclusive to Pulp Fiction because, like I said, you know, around the same time, Kevin Smith was talking about Star Wars and Clerks, and Richard Linklater was making very, very talky movies. Do you want to maybe help expand on that a little bit in terms of the way people talked in movies prior to Pulp Fiction and after Pulp Fiction?
Yeah, well, certainly that's something that Tarantino brought into prominence. And I think you mentioned like Kevin Smith and Richard Linklater. And one major difference, I think, between, say, what Kevin Smith and Richard Linklater were doing in the 90s and what Tarantino was doing is that those Kevin Smith and Richard Linklater movies are about kind of like just regular people talking.
Right.
And what Tarantino did is he combined that naturalistic style of the movies about regular people talking, and he inserted it into that exploitation framework, that the regular people talking were not clerks at a convenience store. They weren't people sitting around in a bar. They were hitmen getting ready to kill people. And so that juxtaposition, I think, is what really was revolutionary about what Tarantino was doing. And of course, he's talked all about his background working in a video store. And because he absorbed so many movies of so many different types, and because he was very egalitarian about his tastes, that he would love a talky Eric Rohmer movie where people talk about relationships just as much as he would love a martial arts B movie. Whereas a lot of, I think, maybe not so much now, but maybe more so back then, those worlds didn't collide as much. And people who were into one of those things would look down on the people who were into the other one of those things. And Tarantino would say, why can't you like all of this stuff? And why can't it all come together? And putting it all together the way that he did is, I think, the main thing that's really revolutionary about the approach in Pulp Fiction. And of course, he has to be good at it. He has to be good at staging the violent, suspenseful, action-y stuff. And he has to be good at writing that really sharp dialogue about personalities interacting so that he can create these memorable characters. And he is really good at both of those, and they come together really well in Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, yeah, awesome. Thank you for expressing that in a way that probably would have taken me a day or two. So now, sitting at the West Wing last week, watching Pulp Fiction, was there a sequence as it was approaching that you said, oh yeah, this is the scene I really want to see?
I mean, I want to see all the scenes, of course, but no, I mean, I think, and we had sort of talked a little before recording this about the pop culture impact of Pulp Fiction as a potential topic. And so I had that a bit in mind, and certainly the scene of Jules and Vincent Vega in the apartment as they confront those three guys or four guys eating burgers at 7 a.m.
Yeah, yeah.
So that they can retrieve the case with Marcellus Wallace's soul in it. Yeah. That scene, I mean, in terms of the pop culture impact, all like any Pulp Fiction memes that you see online, I feel like 95% of them come from that scene.
Right.
And people saying, you know, say what again? And English, do you speak it? And all that kind of stuff. So I think that was the scene it is a great scene, obviously, but that was the scene maybe that I was anticipating the most, because it's just full, like every single line in that scene is something that people have quoted and put in a GIF and posted online, and with good reason, because they're so memorable and they're delivered so well and they're so applicable to so many different situations. So
yeah, it's funny. I actually, on Twitter this morning, I was scrolling through my timeline and I saw somebody took a picture of a woman, I think it was at their doctor's office, who had, it was the back of her shirt, and it was Sam Jackson from that scene pointing the gun out after he gives his big speech, but it said, instead of, you know, saying a Pulp Fiction line, it said 6 feet away, motherfucker, you know, so somebody right. is already benefiting, you know, from Pulp Fiction to make, you know, social distancing shirts, which I thought was pretty funny. But yeah, no, that is very cool. I think probably that scene, and then the scene that leads up to it with Jules and Vincent in the car, are probably the two most parodied from that movie. If you look at like Mad TV from that time or SNL from that time, that's probably what they keyed in on. I also want to say, Josh, I remember, and I'll see if I can find it. It might have been for the MTV Movie Awards, but they did Horshack and Washington from Welcome Back, Kotter, as Vincent and Jules in the car as well, which I remember being pretty funny, just because it's Horshack doing John Travolta.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that stuff has been parodied. I mean, Pulp Fiction, in a way, is one of these movies, one of these classic movies that if you had never seen it, and I find this sometimes with classic movies that are older that I never saw when they were initially released because it was before I was born or before I had the interest in movies. And there have been so many parodies of them over time that if you've seen too many of those parodies and then you go back and you see the original, it's hard to take seriously.
Yeah.
You know, something like, whether that's The Godfather or whether that's Here's Looking at You, Kid, in, you know, Casablanca or something like that, you have to sort of reverse your mindset and realize that this is serious and try to figure out how people approached it in the moment. I mean, and that's not something I have with Pulp Fiction, of course, because I saw it
yeah.
at the time, but I can see how people might have that. And it has been parodied so extensively, and especially those moments. I mean, there's great other moments. I think the other moment that I got excited about watching this particular time was the dance contest yeah. with Vincent Vega and Mia Wallace. And also I that was kind of cool, because they go to Jackrabbit Slim's, the restaurant, and they're sitting in a car, and I was sitting in a car. not as cool. I'm sitting in my Prius sitting in their, you know, vintage 50s car or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it definitely made me think, I'm sure drive-ins are something that, because of that kind of culture, that lowbrow culture that Tarantino celebrates, I'm sure drive-ins are something that he has a fondness for.
Oh yeah.
And, you know, and Jackrabbit Slim's isn't a drive-in, but it's sort of a recreation of drive-in culture in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the dance sequence, when I remembered that was coming up, and it's just, it's so good. And I mean, and it's also something different. It's not, there's no dialogue mm-hmm. and there's no violence, and it's a musical number with dancing, and Tarantino is great at staging that too.
Yeah. And the thing I thought was really cool, and we might have talked about this on the episode with Dave, but they did a twist contest where they didn't use the twist. They used a Chuck Berry song.
That's true. I don't know. Maybe they didn't quite, they couldn't get the rights. I mean, there's so much music in that. The money ran out. I don't know.
But it also seems like that's kind of on brand for Tarantino, I think. You're like not going with the obvious choice.
Yeah. Yeah. I hadn't thought about that, but that's true.
Yeah. So now let's say just hypothetically that Buddy Holly came up to your window while you're watching the movie and you ordered a steak. Are you getting that bloody as hell or burnt to a crisp?
Oh, I go for the bloody as hell, definitely.
Right on, right on. Man, nothing better than a rare steak with some horseradish sauce for me. That's where it's at.
All right. Yeah, I can't deal with spices, so I'd probably go with the A1 steak sauce instead. Nice. But I have the lowbrow taste in food as well.
So is there any standout performance in the movie that you sort of really appreciate? I know we talked a little bit about Sam Jackson, but are there any other performances that sort of stand out to you or are better than the average performance from that actor?
I mean, all of the performances in this movie are great. And I would say for many of the actors, this might be the height of their work, whether that's Sam Jackson or John Travolta, who sadly has gone on to many, many, many bad performances in bad movies, but has been good in other things too. But I think that might be the height for Uma Thurman as well, even though, you know, she worked with Tarantino more and geez, the whole spotlight in the Kill Bill movies. I mean, I think she's just really, really good. So, I mean, obviously, like those are the three leads. So obviously, or maybe the fourth lead would be Bruce Willis, who's also gone on to do some very, very bad stuff. And Bruce Willis is good in this movie, but I feel like Bruce Willis's performance in Pulp Fiction is more of like a standard Bruce Willis performance. Mm-hmm. Not that it's bad, but it's what you expect from him. And it's less of a revelation than maybe seeing some of those other actors. So everyone is great, even in the small roles. I think when we were talking about it on Awesome Movie Year, I mentioned Rosanna Arquette in her role as Jody. There you go, the wife of the drug dealer played by Eric Stoltz. And she's a very background person, but she has some great moments in the background. And there's a really entertaining moment where when Vincent has brought Mia to the house because she's overdosed and Jody is really mad about this whole thing. And she just wants them to leave. And she's all resentful that they're asking her to go get the supplies for them. And then finally they've got the shot and they're about to jam it into Mia. And you see Jody's face and she's just enraptured and she's loving it. And that's a great acting moment, I think, from Rosanna Arquette. That's just like 2 seconds long, but it really tells you so much about the character in that moment, about how much she's really been drawn into this after being annoyed at the whole situation. So that would be maybe an underrated thing I would point out.
Yeah, no, and I agree. And I think that's another thing that Tarantino does really well is it's the detail. Every performer is considered essential, if you will, to the scene. And all the background stuff, you know, it's that attention to detail that I think a lot of people appreciate about Tarantino is it's not just the idea that, oh, you're not really going to see or hear from that person, so who we cast doesn't really matter. And, you know, there's a lot of filmmakers like that, you know, like Ridley Scott on Blade Runner. The magazines that were on the magazine stand were actual real magazines you could pick up and read. Nobody was going to do that, of course, but you could argue that it helped, you know, the authenticity of that movie, as authentic as a fictional 2019 movie could be. But yeah, that's a good point in terms of, you know, performances from characters that weren't the lead. So Josh, I gotta say, this was a really, really, really fun conversation. And hopefully we get to talk again at some other point. But do you have any last sort of thoughts you want to share with the listeners about Pulp Fiction?
Man, I don't know. I don't know who would listen to this podcast and not have seen Pulp Fiction, but if for some reason you decided to start with this, go see Pulp Fiction. I'm glad I got to see it in that drive-in setting. I think I hadn't thought about doing that until literally I went to the website and noticed that they were showing it. And I thought, wait, this is perfect. And I'm glad I did that. I'm hopeful that as new movies start to come out, that they'll still keep booking those older movies at the drive-in. So if they show Pulp Fiction again and you're a Pulp Fiction fan, go see it at the drive-in. It'll bring a new dimension to your experience.
Yeah. All right, Josh, this was awesome. I had a lot of fun. I appreciate you taking out the time out to come and chat with me. And again, I will include links to all of the stuff we talked about, including a link to the Awesome Movie Year podcast. So Josh, thanks again. And like I said, hopefully we can talk again at some point.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
Cheese in gay tabby.
Oh, you mean they don't call it a quarter pounder with cheese? That's crazy.
They call it Royale with cheese.
Royale with cheese.
That's right, very impressive.
Yeah, well, what they call a Big Mac?
A Big Mac is just a f***ing Big Mac, but they call it Love Big Mac.